We're going exclusively inside the Derby camp this week, and we've got a Football League chairman on the way. But give me one good reason why we shouldn't start the show with Gareth Ainsworth and his band, the Cold-Blooded Hearts, singing The Wanderer. None? Leave it a bit longer? No. This is Gareth, and this is the Totally Football League show. Caroline Barker, I'm too a wanderer, but back this week alongside me, he has his wandering style from Southend to Stevenage and Carlisle with a little bit of the Arsenal. Adrian Clark is here.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. You had me at hello. Well on you.
I'm just mixing it up.
Good, I enjoyed it. He barely wandered from the penalty box, Sam Parkin.
Morning.
Oh, that was a little bit higher pitch. You were a little bit gruffer when I spoke to you earlier.
Yeah, got a bad chest. I'm going to soldier on.
Good. Good. That's the kind of approach we like from our strikers. And he is a wanderer, a Bolton wanderer. In fact, all of this was created just so I could say that to him, from William Hill, Joe Crilly.
Good morning.
Mainly because who is this Bolton wanderers we've seen of late?
They're great, aren't they? title contenders, maybe. Maybe not.
Possibly. Hopefully, if they do become title contenders, you might get a bit more excited about it than that. Before we start this week, I need to ask you, have any of you paid up for the Peaky Blinders box at Birmingham City? This is a new thing for all the fans. You two can
They've jumped on the bandwagon a bit, haven't they?
A 7-item finger buffet entitled the Peaky Blinders box.
Well, I've been to West Brom a couple of times this season. They've got Peaky Blinders stand there. Or it's completely sponsored by Peaky Blinders Brewery. So, or there's a Peaky Blinders beer that's all plastered all over the stand opposite the main one at West Brom. So, look, a bit of Peaky Blinders war going on, warfare in the Midlands. I think Birmingham are jumping on the bandwagon here, aren't they?
I think there is some suggestion that one of the main players in the Peaky Blinders was from Aston as well. So that's a third Midlands club.
The plot thing.
This is the wrong that needs to be right.
Christmas do, though? We could hire it out.
All go as Peaky Blinders?
Yeah.
I'm up for that, if you are. Maybe not.
You're listening to the Totally Football League show in association with William Hill.
Let's get stuck in, shall we? And we'll start with the Championship at the Totally Show if you want to be part of it too with your Peaky Blinders suggestions. It is boing boing baggies, whether they're peaky or not. They go top of the table after a 2-0 win at managerless Stoke. Managerless because it's bye-bye Nathan Jones. It seems like 4 weeks ago, actually, that we were saying that, but it's only just been this week. If Stoke had their way, it'd be hello to Alex Neil, possibly. The Cowley brothers' revolution continues at Huddersfield. Now 7 games unbeaten. We've now got 15 teams separated by 9 points. And how did you spend your Sunday afternoon? Because Marcelo Bielsa got stuck into a bit of chilly women's hockey. He didn't take his bucket to sit on. He did, though, give them a team talk. I was at, where was I? Barnsley. Against Bristol City on Friday night, and there was talk that Bielsa would be there, and some wag did shout from the back as he brought his bucket to sit on, which he probably needs to put over his head. It was that wet. I'd love a team talk from Bielsa. We've seen that crossover happen before, haven't we? Different sports.
Yeah, but could you understand it?
What? I haven't had a team talk, but I would love it.
No, but I'm only saying we wouldn't be beneficiaries of a Bielsa team talk because his English is it's not great, is it?
See, I'm not so sure. Who here hasn't spoken to a manager who professes not to have good enough English to talk to the press but is brilliant when you talk to them one-on-one?
Yeah, that is an old chestnut.
He's got a strong Weatherby accent he's got now.
Yeah. He's a scholar of the game. That absolutely is, yeah.
So in which case, I'd love it. Oh, how Stoke could maybe do with a bit of his knowledge at the moment. Not surprised about Nathan Jones going, Sam. We thought maybe, say, 4 or 5 weeks ago he was going.
I am still surprised. Yeah, I was surprised because I think on this show 3 weeks ago after they had that victory over Fulham, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I anticipated them really picking up and I felt that he would get it right, that they'd backed him. So I am surprised to a degree. I'm sure Nathan Jones will be fine in time. He'll get another good job. But yeah, they were pitiful the other night in that defeat against West Brom. I mean, they hardly laid a glove on them. I kind of anticipated them going a little bit more defensive considering the opposition, but it looks like a squad bereft of confidence and went away from the diamond and it's almost starting again. They just need someone to come in as soon as possible. And but it's going to be so tricky because we've seen it with not one manager, but probably three managers now.
Yeah, need a strong manager, don't they? And one with experience. You can't be going for another younger guy. I think it's someone who's been there and looked after different scenarios in their career. Needs to go in and use all of their experience. And someone strict, really, just to knock their heads together.
Because of the players. Because of everything that's kind of been inferred over the past few weeks about the power within that dressing room.
Yeah, on the pitch, all we can see is what's going on the pitch, and they don't look like they're really working that hard for one another. The spirit is low. It's a real mess. Delap went with three at the back, didn't he, the other day. That didn't work. It's really poor. All departments have functioned badly. I've got a good stat on Stoke, and this is nothing to do with the manager situation, but it's sort of symptomatic of what's gone wrong there. Not a single Stoke midfielder has created a goal this season. Not one. I'll give you the stat. Lee Gregory, who's a forward, has got two, and every other assist has come from a defender. It's quite astonishing, really. Creatively, they've had nothing this year at Stoke, and that's just one part of the problem that the new manager has to solve. Steve Clark's been linked, hasn't he? Chris Hughton, Tony Pulis. Yeah, Steve Clark, I think, linked overnight.
Yeah.
He's a strong guy, but he's manager of Scotland, so I'm not sure whether he'd move or not. But yeah, they need someone really tough to get stuck into this team, otherwise they're going down.
We'll get some odds from Joe in just a minute on who could be the new Stoke boss and whether Clark has shifted into that as well. Away at Barnsley next. Huge, huge match for Stoke. And if you've got no one in there that wants to... If you're not going to show up for Roy Delap, then how are you going to show up for anyone else going into that match at Barnsley?
Yeah, it's a huge game. I don't know why, but I've always kind of been against, like, the Sam Allardyce's and the Tony Pulis's getting another gig. But I don't know, they've tried everything else in the last few years. And, you know, we speak about the mentality of this group, you know, coming out of the Premier League. Is there still some prima donnas there? Well, they could probably do worse than getting Tony Pulis in there now to try and just get a tune out of this squad. The problem with this weekend is it's the opportunity for one of these teams to be cut adrift.
Yeah.
Well, that's likely to happen. So it's a huge game. Barnsley have been better in terms of their performances under Murray, scoring a few more goals. I actually looked at this. That starting lineup that Stoke had out against West Brom, there were six goals in that starting 11, whereas Barnsley in their previous game, I think 12 goals. So there's more goals in the Barnsley team, I would suggest. It could be two similar systems looking to cancel each other out, but I would anticipate Stoke at least having a bit more of a go considering Barnsley's plight.
Have either of you sat in dressing rooms where, might have been both of you, but have you sat in a dressing room where there's been a new manager come in and the power has sat with other players in that dressing room? How do you control it? Do you just bin them off completely? Is that even possible? Or how do you get rid of that noise that's already in there?
I think managers have come in and they've got to be aggressive and they've got to be bold straight away. And if they have bad eggs in that dressing room, then they normally act very quickly. I've been in dressing rooms where you can sense that you're on a slippery slide towards relegation, you know, and there's no coming back from it if there's a large group of the players. Sometimes it can be too strong, that influence. I would suggest that there's still enough games to go in this season. There's still another window. And there's enough good players at Stoke to at least consolidate in the Championship this year, get their house in order and try and get back in the Premier League in the next couple of years. It's not all lost because the squad of players still, to me, and some of the recruitment, you look at Gregory and Hogan, I know they're missing at the moment. I think that's big for them, taking away that threat. Yeah, this appointment is enormous, but I don't see it all being lost just yet.
Yeah, I've been in dressing rooms where senior players have had the year of the hierarchy, the board members, the chairman, and I just hated it myself because I was a young player at the time. And you just think that they've obviously got their own vested interests, and I don't think that the chairman should be engaging too much with the players or the ownership, in my opinion. And players can get managers sacked. They can just leak information, just say, look, it's not happening. Dressing room's not having him. And before you know it, that guy's gone. Who's to say they can't do it with the next one and the next one and the next one? So it really does take a strong manager. I've also played under caretakers who've been quite a little bit weak. And then you virtually have the senior players dictating what's going to happen. So it's important that Stoke don't let that drift on. I think they need to make a fairly swift appointment and to instill someone that from day one will make it their rules.
8 points, bottom of the table, point behind Barnsley, and then Middlesbrough on 12 points, Luton on 14, then 15, 15, 16, 18, 18. Still fairly tight around that bottom of the table. But you're right, Sam, defeat and what that would do to them this weekend as well for either of those teams. Has anything changed with Stoke's odds on going down on the managers coming in, Joe?
Well, Stoke are amongst the favourites for relegation now. Their odds haven't really changed since the departure of Nathan Jones. They're 7-4 joint second favourites alongside Luton and behind only Barnsley to go down from the Championship. And in terms of who's going to take over, Steve Clarke has been mentioned overnight. He doesn't feature anywhere in our betting. He's around about 25-1 shot. I think that's quite an audacious bid from Stoke to try and prize him away from Scotland, especially with Scotland having having a playoff for the Euros in the summer. The favourites are Chris Hughton at 2-1, Tony Pulis at 5-2, and then there's a big gap. So it looks like a two-horse race, really, in the betting, with Alan Pardew, Michael O'Neill and Alex Neil all 8-1.
Quick word on West Brom then. Julian Dix, Slaven Bilic, the joy in their faces. Now they're up towards the top of the table. Do you feel like anyone will wrestle it away from them?
Yeah, I think that the leader will chop and change. I don't think any team's going to run away with the Championship this year.
Nah.
West Brom continues to surprise me because they're performing exceptionally well and they're definitely improving, and we know about where their strengths lie with the Dean Garners and players of that ilk, Sawyers, of course. But they're top of the league without a striker that's scoring goals. I mean, Charlie Austin's having a mare. And no one else is really chipping in terms of the front men. Robson Carnoux's obviously made a bit of an impact of late.
Gareth Barry, though.
And at the back, I still don't think they've got their best centre-back partnership. Hegazi, I think, is close to coming back. So both ends of the pitch, they're definitely not as strong as they could be, yet they're top.
It's mad, isn't it? Because, of course, there's a strong argument when you've got ideally two players that are capable of getting you 15, 20 goals in tandem, or even one that can get you 25. But we've seen in the Championship, even Wolves, when they got promoted, they didn't really have an out-and-out centre-forward getting 20 goals. Cardiff certainly didn't. I think it is achievable. I think there's just different ways of doing it.
I wonder. I'm just thinking about Carvey Barnes last year. It was brilliant, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So good that he got recalled. I wonder what West Ham are thinking. With Grady Dean Garner at the moment. I don't know if there's a break clause in this or not. West Ham aren't exactly pulling up trees. Dean Garner could potentially head back if that's on. Pereira, I think, has made the difference of late. They've put him in behind the front player instead of Kravinovic, who flattered to deceive, in my opinion. So I think that was a really smart move from Bilic. But yeah, look, they're doing great, but don't think they're going to run away with it.
Can I just say again, Gareth Barry, back in 39 years young, that he could be the difference. You never know. Talking of an old man returning, Wayne Rooney. He has apparently gone back, had his little chat with Derby this week. He's off on holiday. Then he's going to start his pre-season in December. So all set for that still to happen. Our man Nick, off the team, has been speaking to a Derby fella, Christian Bielik, who's expected to be fit for the small tussle at Nottingham Forest at the weekend.
Well, I know that, you know, this is a big game. It's a big derby game. So a few boys already said that it's going to be a big and tough game. So we will be prepared and we will be ready for this game. So nothing special for me. I played already in big games, so it's going to be another important game for me.
So the results have kind of been up and down a little bit this season. Has that been kind of the squad and the team getting used to the manager's style and what he wants from you? Obviously, new manager to the club and to the country and the league.
Well, I think, you know, everything takes time. You know, it's a new manager, new players as well. So you know, I think we're doing all right. And you know, there's always up and downs, but you know, I think when we get on this good run, we will go down again. So we work on it really hard on the training pitch to have this good run, and I hopefully it will come soon.
Where do you think you are maybe not in terms of kind of results or, you know, position in the league table, but where you are as a team? Where do you think you are compared to where maybe you thought you were going to be at the start of the season?
Well, I think Derby County is one of the biggest clubs in Championship. So, you know, if you look at the table, we are 15th now, right now. But there is 4 points. We are 4 points behind playoffs. So, you know, and about 7 points to the top or 8 points to the top. So, you know, I think we need to be focused on our work. We need to be focused on our football, what we want to do on the pitch. And I think we will get there, you know. So there's so many games in this season, like every season in Championship. So, you know, the table can, you know, change massively at the end of the season. So we you know, we're confident, we focus on our football, and I'm pretty confident we will be there in playoffs or on top.
How key is this game in Nottingham Forest this weekend for Derby?
Pretty big. It gives Cocu the chance, doesn't it, to claim a big scalp. And the season's been pretty flat. I know that they should actually, I think, feel delighted to be where they are in the league table, given that they've been fairly, well, I think they've been worse than mediocre during the course of the campaign. They're very much in touch with the playoff picture. And look, if they can go to the City Ground and win, then the mood will be lifted no end, won't it?
Yeah, they're 15th, but they're just 4 points off Bristol
nothing,
City
is it?
And 6.
It's absolutely nothing. They go there, they played a different system in the last game, went with two up top, which me and Sam have been sort of crying out for, really, from them. They went with Marriott and Martin. Previously, he just wanted the one up front, and it worked. They had a bit more about them against Middlesbrough. But I was reading some of the quotes from Cocu afterwards, and I get the feeling that's not something he wants to get married to. He was basically saying, yeah, in certain matches, particularly when we play three defenders, then I think having two up front will work. But it wouldn't surprise me if they went back to their norm for the Derby game. And yeah, look, they got a bit of payback. Like, I was at the game last year and they were awful. Lampard's players didn't turn up. They owe their supporters a performance. So it'd be fascinating to see what happens. But you have to say that they would be big underdogs against Forest.
I still don't think we've heard the last of the incident involving Keogh and Co. I know we've heard from Richard Keogh's agent this week. That's going to go backwards and forwards, regardless of the where's and wherefores and whatever's happened there. Is that still affecting Derby, do you think, Sam?
I think it's brought up quite a lot by the manager post-match at the moment. You know, each passing week there seems to be more noise. There's an update. This week we've had the agent speaking. So I think it was a big win last time out, definitely. And I think it'll have done them some good. I think there's a couple of things on Derby. I think I said Wayne Rooney wouldn't get in the team. He definitely will get in the team. But I did write them off after that first game of the season away at Huddersfield. I just didn't feel they were going to have anything more than a mediocre season. And I'm still completely with that statement. I think getting Lawrence playing in his best position at the tip of a diamond is a no-brainer. So I think that's a real positive for them, and getting the two lads in tandem up front. But no, I think it's probably had a disabling effect. I think you know our takes on it, Caroline.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit confused as to why Derby have made this stance. I think it, of course, has got something to do with finances. I think they had two options. You sack the trio, or you back Richard Keogh through his rehabilitation, pay him his wages, and then sever ties at the end of his contract.
Mm. Yeah, it seems unfair. I think you go all in. You either get rid of all three or none at all. And you could argue that he's been a victim, as much as Derby County have, of what happened, in terms of he wasn't driving and he's the one out for a lengthy period of time. It does make you think, moving forward, should football clubs insert mandatory clauses in every player's contract whereby if you get injured away from football, then there is an automatic wage reduction? Because there is a problem there, isn't there? Because I do see it from Derby's point of view. It's not their fault. Yet they're now lumbered having to pay an injured player a hefty amount of money for a long, long time, where he can't give you anything.
Does that happen with sort of things like dangerous sports? You can't go and your insurance coverage and things around.
Exactly. Yeah, it does. I've known it to happen. Players getting injured during the summer.
Mm.
And unfortunately, if you are an asset and you're someone who's in the team and have been doing well previously, they'll back you.
They'll let it go, yeah.
They'll back you. So that just shows you exactly the predicament Richard Keogh's found himself in, because at 33, I believe he is coming towards the end of his career. You know, he's not probably going to be getting in many championship first 11s when he returns.
Well, legal action is going to follow. And so it's not going to go away.
At the Totally Show for your thoughts. We will talk maybe about odds on Nottingham Forest Derby in a moment and also Barnsley Stoke. But one other game I wanted to talk about, Cardiff, Bristol City coming up, Adrian.
Yeah, Cardiff. It's a big game, seven-side derby. I've been to this one at Ashton Gate before and it's pretty lively.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, the fans, they really don't like each other. So I'm looking forward to the game. Cardiff, they needed that. It was a very lucky win, I think, against Birmingham. A jammy penalty. But that might be the kickstart they needed.
Who are they? Who are Cardiff City this season?
Well, I'll tell you exactly in a minute.
Well, they're not as good defensively as they were. That's for sure. They're letting in a lot more goals than you'd expect. I don't think the keeper's playing very well. Neil Etheridge is having a bit of an iffy season. The good news is that Sol Bamba's back in the matchday squad. So he will be close to a return. Who are they? I mean, what were they when they went up? I mean, that's we still probably don't know the answer to that. They're such an ugly team to watch. Yet when they get inside the final third, when you've got Hoylett and Mendes Lang, you've always got a chance to make things happen. That's what's got them promoted the first time. Who's to say that if they can solidify at the back, that won't be repeated? The issue is with the striker. Glatzel has had a bit of a nightmare. On the expected goals, he should have scored five or six. He's got two penalties. He's out. There's a striker crisis, I think, ahead of this game. It's just Bogle, really, that's the main option up top. So, no, we don't know who they are. And for that reason, I think Bristol have got a good chance here of picking up a positive result.
I see it as a real contrast in managerial styles, first and foremost. I think Cardiff arguably have less of the ball now than they did in their promotion season. I mean, Birmingham City had 66% the other day. 26 shots to 12 and Cardiff City won 4-2. And it's the exact same game that I saw a few weeks ago when I saw QPR handsomely beaten there as well. So say what you like about Cardiff, they'll pick up results. I don't enjoy watching them, I'll say that. And what we'll see at the weekend is a manager in Lee Johnson who is very flexible in his setup, who can change, who does change in game. Cardiff 4-3-3. And I think defensively, Bristol City have got three very good options at centre-half. So there's an argument to say that they'll deal pretty well with an aerial bombardment. But I think in midfield, where the second ball's, where you've got to be aggressive, that's where Cardiff will, in my eyes, naturally have the upper hand. So Lee Johnson's got to look at that area. And at the moment, it's Brownhill that's been in there. He got injured at the weekend, though. Masengo, the young boy, and O'Dowda. I mean, that is a very nice technical midfield, but there's not a great deal of aggression in there. So I just think if Lee Johnson does make a change this weekend, it may be to shore up that area of the pitch.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, I think there's a lot of gritty players in the Cardiff team. I don't think it will be an aerial bombardment because the big men are out for Cardiff. Obviously, we know about corners and free kicks. Seven set-piece goals Cardiff have scored this season. That's among the highest in the division. And Bristol City, one of their main weaknesses is corners. They've let in five. So you know it's going to be all about getting winning that midfield battle, getting the wingers into the game for Cardiff, and then from there, from corners, from wide free kicks, they're going to pose a real threat. So no, it's going to be interesting. It's by no means I think it's a very difficult game to predict.
Can I just ask you, and this is purely because I want a measure on you both as men and where you stand in society.
Oh dear.
Would you vote for zonal marking or not? And I say that having watched the Barnsley-Bristol City game and zonal marking on that first goal that Barnsley conceded.
As a player, I probably would have because I hated going back and picking up from set pieces more than anything in the world because I was useless. I spent my whole life trying to get away from people. So when you get asked to go and do the other job and the run back, that's an extra 100 yards a few times each game. I used to hate it. As a manager, man for man.
Yeah.
Player, zonal, manager, man for man.
Yeah, look, there are flaws to both. Zonal marking gets a lot of bad press. But when you watch man to man, when you see these scrums around the penalty spot where you've got four or five players just jostling away, it's actually, in my opinion, just as easy to score against man to man as it is zonal because of the blockers and just you cause chaos. And it's fairly easy for one man out of a four-man or an eight-man melee to escape. It's actually pretty easy. If I was a manager, I'd do a mix. I would have zonals along the six-yard box and then I would pick up at least the three best headers of the ball. I'd go for man-to-man.
Didier Drogba in the the near post space I'd have as well. Every week.
Well, if we're going wish list.
Didn't you get that gig? No, you didn't get that gig.
I was dreadful. Yeah. I was at fault for a lot of goals at defending set pieces. Yeah,
always stick someone on the post. Always on the post.
I was deliberately bad so they'd leave me up front.
I did a particularly bad handball once when I just kind of lost the flight of the ball, and Mick Harford absolutely ruined me.
Yeah, I was sent off for handball on the line as well, standing on the post.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm
shameful scenes.
Both of you could have leapt like salmon, I'm sure, without the hands. Joe, where do you stand on it?
You've got to have two fullbacks on the post.
Right.
Two big lads on the centre, the penalty spot, and then anybody else can just.
The problem is doing two things at once. I couldn't watch a man and the ball.
No.
Just watching the ball, no problem.
Yeah. What, watching it go past you into the goal? Well, Joe, you are the winner of that particular debate. Well done. You can come back again. We will not empty chair you. Nottingham Forest Derby, Barnsley, Stoke, and Cardiff, Bristol City. Joe, odds for this weekend, please.
Okay, so the early kickoff on Saturday, Nottingham Forest are the favourites to beat Derby, 23-20, with the away side 12-5 and the draw 5-2. Barnsley Stoke are actually favourites to win this away from home, 6-4. Barnsley 9-5 to get the win at home, and the draw 12-5. And Cardiff are favourites to win on Sunday, even money. Bristol City nearly 3-1 at 27-10, and the draw 13-5.
We are out of this zone and heading into League One next.
Get great offers every day with William Hill. Join today and get £30 in free bets when you bet £10 using the promo code C30. Whether you like great prices, free bets, or in-play scoreboards, William Hill has you covered. William Hill is who you play with. Promo code C30, new online customers only. Minimum £10 stake, win only. Minimum odds 1-2. Free bets paid as free £10 bets, 30-day expiry. Free bet payment method, player and country restrictions apply.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker.
What's going on down in League One then? Wickham go joint top of the pile and Ainsworth becomes the longest serving manager in the top four divisions this week after Jim Bentley left Morecambe. We'll talk to Morecambe in a bit, by the way. Another manager then getting the hook. This time it's goodbye to Paul Tisdale at Milton Keynes. Bolton aren't very Bolton. Back-to-back league wins for the first time since August 2018 when Joe was in nappies. Oxford hold the longest unbeaten run in the EFL. Now 12 games for Carl Robinson's men. And it's not going very well for Sol, is it? Still waiting for his first point in charge of Southend after a 4-1 defeat at former club Pompey. Shimper's now 8 points from safety. They do have the joys of the FA Cup coming up this weekend, which we will also have a little look at, but they go to Dover. That won't be easy. Milton Keynes, Paul Tisdale, right decision, anyone, for anyone?
I'm a little bit biased and I'll try and give it a bit of balance. I feel it's a bit premature. I know that I've been consistent on this show when you get 6, 7, 8 defeats in a run. You know, the supporters normally voice their concerns and it's no surprise when managers lose their jobs. But I'll point back to Paul Tisdale, 2016-17, this time of year at Exeter, rock bottom of the Football League. And they went on to get to the playoffs that season, another playoff campaign the following year. And I remember being down there this time of year, November. He was low. There was a huge injury list, which he can probably point towards at the moment at Milton Keynes. And I think when you employ Paul Tisdale, given what he did over a long period of time at Exeter, you have to think that it's an appointment for a long time and you have to try and have longevity. So I think he could potentially have turned it around, but the results recently have been hellish. It's just one goal in the last six games. There's a real lack of pace, a real lack of goals in the team. And it's no surprise when you look at what they lost in EK Wheeler to Wickham. Hesketh, they had on loan back in the last season. He's at Lincoln now. Reece Healy's injured. There's a number of players that they've had sporadically this season that have now picked up injuries. So it's not completely unfathomable to realise where they're in this situation. I just think that potentially he could have turned things around. But it's been pretty dire. And ultimately, they're still trying to build a fan base, MK Dons. And if you're not getting new people coming to the games and they're not enjoying the football, you're not going to be running a successful business.
Just point out that the Russell Martin has got the job. Russell has maybe, as we were saying with Stoke, taken a player from within and what he can do for it. But just briefly, have you spoken to Paul about any of it?
No, I probably will speak to Danny Butterfield, one of his coaches who I was close to during my time at Exeter, and he's become a big part of his backroom staff along with Matt Oakley and Mel Gwinnett, their goalkeeping coach. So they've all left in the last couple of days. So, no, it's going to be really interesting. I'm sure, like I said about Nathan Jones, no doubt that Paul Tisdale will get another job. I'll be very surprised if he's not linked with a couple of the vacancies straight away. He'll be fine. But it'll be interesting under Martin. He should have a good idea after what he learned under Daniel Farker. I know it was only brief, but I think that's where his Norwich career ended. But I've read an interview with him and he seemed to really enjoy that period. So, listen, it's a gamble.
But if anyone knows what that squad is capable of, it's going to be him. There'll be no illusions from him over what he's got to deal with, I guess.
Yeah, but it's a big task, isn't it? He's spoken about playing expansive football and playing exciting football, and maybe that's what he's picked up towards the tail end of his career when teams have been playing more exuberant style. But it's a big gamble.
Yeah, I agree. I'll echo most of what Sam said there. I think it's a bit harsh. They sort of stumbled over the line, didn't they, last year? If you cast your mind back.
It wasn't pretty, was it?
No.
I think they lost three of their last eight. It wasn't the most convincing of promotions. And I think there's a slight hangover. And the players that have been brought in to replace those that Sam mentioned that moved on haven't quite lived up to the hype. I do think injuries are massive. Reece Healy is definitely their most potent forward player, and he's been missing, and he was delivering early on in the season. He's been out, and Sam Nombe is a player that really was catching the eye when they were picking up points. It's no coincidence that they've started to, the goals have dried up with those two out of the team. I think you look at the goals, some really bad goals they're giving away. The centre halves look a little bit all over the shop for MK, so maybe organisationally they could have done a bit better. But look, yeah, Russell Martin's worked under some good managers, hasn't he? Farker's just won, Lambert, I think Houghton, he would have worked under at Norwich as well. Darren Ferguson at Peterborough before. So yeah, he'd have picked up plenty. Little thing on Russell Martin as I was doing my research. Big vegan. Don't know if you notice.
Why have you made that face when you said it?
Oh, I didn't.
he just curled his lips and looked at you.
Well, it's the cult of the vegan, isn't it? The vegans are everywhere. But anyway, he owns a vegan restaurant.
The cult of the vegan. At the Totally Show, vegans get in touch.
He's a big vegan. He owns a vegan restaurant. He's a member of the Green Party. For me, if he does well at MK, he's definitely a future Forest Green manager, right?
Is this a party political broadcast on behalf of Dale Vince? Yeah, too right. I very much favour the bean curd burger. No, what do they have at Forest Green?
Best food in the division.
Something nice. I dipped it in chocolate and it was fine. For him then, Russell Martin, he's been taking the pro licence. He's a vegan, so it looks like everything will be well for him. After the FA Cup weekend, of course, coming up this weekend, then they've got your team, Joe. The first league game, 16th of November, is Bolton.
That's right,
away.
Yeah.
So what has happened with Bolton?
I think they've just got clicking. If you think about the players that Keith Hill brought in on that last day of the transfer window, none of them had had a pre-season, so it will have taken them a bit of time to hit the ground. But now that they're seeming to pick up a little bit of momentum, they're not playing particularly pretty football, but they've picked up a couple of results. If you count the leasing.com trophy, which I know a lot of people don't, it's not actually.
I've won it. And it's former guys. JPT.
How many minutes did you play?
4 minutes.
Still enough?
Yeah. Gets multiplied every time I get asked.
Where's the medal?
It's in my drawer in my hallway.
including a match against Manchester City under-21s, Bolton have actually won 3 in a row. So they're picking up momentum. They haven't got the biggest squads, and injuries are taking their toll a little bit.
15 points now from safety.
Yeah, and for the first time, they aren't the favourites for relegation. They're still massively odds on to go down, but Southend are now a shorter price than Bolton Wanderers to get relegated.
I mean, Southend going down, aren't they? Yeah. Only said that to see if anyone would fly in from next door to have a word with me.
They are, but I feel a bit sorry for Sol, considering he had Ipswich, Sunderland, Portsmouth first 3 games. I didn't even see that coming. No. I didn't look at the fixtures, poor man.
But he would have done that, and I kind of... So he knew that, and I just wonder whether that's just a... I know this becomes a Southend United podcast, but whether you just write those ones
off. Yeah, it doesn't start till Saturday, probably. Yeah. You know, anything would have been a bonus in those three games.
Quick word on... Maybe we'll get the prices from you in a minute. Ipswich going back, joint top. Wickham said doing so well under Gareth Ainsworth. Peterborough, Oxford, Fleetwood, Coventry. Sunderland in seventh. They've confirmed that that significant investment is happening from the American consortium. I wonder whether that's going to change things for Sunderland now. We've always said it for so long. It's so set up. But now that little bit more money coming in, whether this is their time now to really push on.
Yeah, but
that's
it's not...
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
If you're not going to do it now, then when are you going to do
but
it?
But last season... they were able to go and buy Will Grigg for big money and they paid big transfer fees. So it doesn't all come down to that. It's more about the man that's got the job right now. Can he get a better tune out of these players? And so far, so good at the Stadium of Light. Even though it was scrappy against Southend at the weekend, just need to improve the away form. Get that consistency going. And no, I've got no doubt that Sunderland are going to be pushing for promotion now they've got Phil Parkinson.
Yeah, they don't even have to be sensational away from home. They just need to be solid, not lose as many games away from home. And I'm confident that the Stadium of Light, they'll pick up enough points to go up, actually. I don't think the division is quite as strong this season as it was last year. I think Wickham are doing amazingly, but I just don't know how sustainable it is. Peterborough are great going forward, but a bit flaky at the back. Oxford are contenders. Fleetwood probably short on strength in depth. Coventry don't score enough goals. I think Phil Parkinson should get Sunderland up alongside Ipswich. I think that was what we pretty much said at the start of the season. And I still think those two will eventually prevail.
I don't know, and Joe, whether it backs it up or not, but I sat with Brian Lee, long-time legend of Wickham, and he seems fairly confident about, particularly if you hang on to Gareth Ainsworth, where this team will end up and their potential for the future. Again, they've had investment come in from the American side of things too, so what that will do for them. Bolton, Milton Keynes, we can look at that again, Joe, before it comes round, but any odds changing in League One for you?
At the top of the table, Wickham are still 7-2 to get promoted, which makes them seventh favourites. And interestingly enough, they are one of the least backed teams in the division when it comes to accumulators each weekend. I think people are expecting them every weekend to kind of drop off, and every weekend they keep surprising us. And it's just an interesting thing that we picked up on a couple of weeks ago. I think people are expecting them to drop off, but so far so good for them. At the bottom of the table, mentioned already, Southend 1-16 to go down, Bolton 1-12, Wimbledon 7-4, and it looks like MK Dons might just squeak to safety at 9-4.
Those are the facts and figures in League One. Last stop, League Two. Last week it was a waterlogged pitch. This week it was gale force winds. Plymouth Grimsby postponed after severe wind wreaks havoc with the home park roof. But the game was only called off less than 3 hours before kickoff. Just the 690-mile round trip for Grimsby fans. Owen Doyle is better than Messi and Ronaldo combined. 14 goals this season for Swindon's finest on loan from Bradford. Disclaimer, striker. Forest Green Rovers moved top of the League Two table with a derby win at Cheltenham 2-1. Cheltenham's 17-match unbeaten run gone. And Northampton's Sean McWilliams is out for up to a month after falling ill before Saturday's game. Turns out he needed his appendix removed. We spoke about the fact that Gareth Ainsworth is now the longest serving manager in all four divisions. That's because of Jim Bentley leaving Morecambe. Morecambe co-chair Rod Taylor joined us for a quick chat. A win for Kevin Ellison and Barry Roach at Orient at the weekend. So did that result change Taylor's mind on where they go next?
It was a welcome boost from a lot of points of view. Morale, you know, first home win for a while. I don't think it's changed our view where we're going. We've had dozens of applicants and we've been interviewing. We drew up a shortlist over the weekend, been interviewing over the past 2 days, and some really tremendous applicants. Yeah, very pleased.
It's a bit daft, isn't it? Because I know when I was involved a lot lower down the pyramid, but the calibre of manager that you get, have you been surprised by the, I'm not saying you're not a great club, but the level? Have you had ex-Premier League players? Who have you, the types that you've had apply?
Yes, we have indeed. Ex-Premier League players, all across the spectrum, really. You know, people with massive portfolios of what they've previously done. Yeah, really pleasant surprise. And of course, we haven't interviewed a manager formally since 1994, so it's a little bit different for us.
I was going to say that, Rod. It's something really, really new for you. Are you having to persuade the candidates potentially that you're the right club for them? I only say that because Jim Bentley, of course, famously never had any money to spend on transfer fees as such. Are you having to explain the way it's going to work at Morecambe if they do take the job?
No, absolutely. I think you've got to be transparent in these situations without a shadow of a doubt. We, you know, and that's a two-way street, the manager coming in and ourselves. It's got to be a transparent situation. It wouldn't be fair otherwise at all.
Ellison and Roach, are they part of your thinking? Could you just give it to them for the rest of the season at least?
It would be an option. I think we've got to look at all options at the moment. Until we've actually fixed on what we see as the candidate, each one of those, you've got to look at the rules as well from the point of view of what licences they've got, what badges they've got. So there's a lot of things to consider. And I've got to say, Kev and Barry and John McMahon have done a fabulous job since Jim went. They've really gelled people together. There is a galvanised squad there. And it was tough for them. Jim going was really tough. It was tough for all of us.
Yeah.
But we all understand the reasons why. We get that. And we've now got to move on. Jim will always be a hero at Morecambe Football Club. And in the fullness of time, as I said on Saturday, we will formally recognise that. We wouldn't do anything else. You know, 17 and a half years at one club, it's a massive amount of time.
Those comments from him after leaving Jim Bentley said that the board wanted him to stay, but the owners have a different view. Is that right? And how much of a say, given that, if that is true, how much of a say will you actually get in appointing a new manager?
Well, appointing a new manager is a board decision, a full board decision. It's basically one man, one vote. The owners are very supportive. You know, and again, I said on Saturday, if it hadn't been for Colin and Jason, there may not have been a Morecambe Football Club now. They came in at a very difficult time. They've supported us financially. They are remote from it geographically, but they have supported us, and we're very, very grateful for that.
Bentley's been quite vocal, hasn't he, as we were saying to Rod there about the reason why he left. Says he went of his own volition, though, Rod Taylor says, and it'll be a board decision on where they go next. Do you do, I guess, as we've just been talking about with Russell Martin, and stick with a couple of players involved in it? Or as a player, it's difficult, Sam, to know when. I know both of you have gone the other route and gone down the punditry route, but to know when to not stop your career. They want to keep on playing,
yeah,
but then take the management route as well. If you're offered it, you take it, right?
I think there must be a big temptation to keep this appointment in-house, considering what Jim Bentley did, and also because of the kind of restrictions you're working under,
yeah,
at Morecambe. So that has to come into the equation with a potential new manager coming in from outside. You know, what players can I bring in? What's the training facility like? What are the travel arrangements for away games? You know, all that comes into the equation, I think, when you're trying to get on the managerial ladder. I think Kevin Ellison and Barry Roche clearly will know absolutely everything there is to know about that club. They've been very successful as players. Yeah, I would envisage them wanting to take the job, even if that means that their playing time diminishes. And on the Jim Bentley point, the guy wasn't backed. You know, he wasn't presented with a new contract offer. You know, he's been there a long time. He probably feels that he deserved a new contract. If that wasn't forthcoming, good luck to him. Go and get yourself a better contract elsewhere. I
absolutely don't blame him for going.
Nope.
No, it sounds bang on there. Personally, if I was a Morecambe fan, I would prefer if someone new came in, because when someone's been in charge for so long, I just think they might be a little bit set in their ways. And let's face it, it hasn't gone very well this year. And they've sort of not been at the top of the table necessarily in the last few years either. I think having someone new with fresh ideas, a fresh pair of eyes, might be just what the club needs to perk up a little bit and to maybe bring around a turnaround. So look, we'll see. It didn't sound from that interview as if those two were going to get the job. So it will either be someone else from within or, as I say, somebody from outside. I would personally go with that.
Former Premier League player, perhaps. What odds on who's the next Morecambe boss? I didn't ask him because I knew he wouldn't tell me who the Premier League players were.
Joe, since that chat, change your odds?
What odds were they? What chat was that?
I'm glad just you were listening to Rod Taylor.
Just now.
with Rod before the dentist.
Yeah,
I've been texting the guys. No. No, everything's exactly the same.
Paul Ince.
16-1, Sam. Outside chance. Barry Roach is actually the favourite. Kevin Ellison is 8-1, bigger prize. Ex-Premier League player, Kevin Nolan, 7-2, second favourite. He was on the debate on Sky on Monday night, definitely talking about wanting to get into management as soon as possible. So this could be the opening for him.
It's funny how they turn up on TVs and things, you know, when suddenly the fans are getting back into
it. Exactly. And Brian McDermott, third favourite, 5-1.
He won't fancy Morecambe.
Whatever happened to Brian McDermott?
that is a blast from the past.
They have a nice place in Bracknell. He's not going to want to go up there, is he?
It's got Nolan written all over it. But who knows? In football, we've been wrong before. But yeah, this has the look of a job that he would take to get back in.
Never wrong for long. Shall we talk FA Cup games? Because they dominate, of course, this weekend. Kicks off with Dulwich up against Carlisle. That one on Friday night. Oh, we mentioned Southend. Southend going to Dover. That's not easy at the best of times. That's not going to happen there for them. Some of the other key ties, Leighton Orient, Maldon and Tiptree. Go on the Jammers.
It's not going to happen for them. You've just written them off,
It is a horrible place.
Supercell's blue and white army.
Yeah, well, possibly. If you're going to go and you're going to get something to lift you into the league, then you could turn around and say that's a perfect opportunity for Southend United.
Look, they are still a League One team. They're pretty playing like a team that... I think if they were in League Two right now, Southend, I think they might still be in the bottom two. That's how bad they've been, which is a worry. Dover's a big pitch, played there many, many times. It can get quite heavy as well. So yeah, it might be typical. If we see what the weather's like, might not be nice conditions down there. So now I can see why you call it an upset. Yeah, I'm looking at Leighton Orient against Morden and Tiptree. On the radio show I present, they've become our adopted team. We started off with Great Yarmouth Town. Gone through the rounds, it was Royston, and they lost in the last round to Morden and Tiptree. Now, Morden and Tiptree, I think, have got a chance here. There are a lot of divisions below. It's Ryman North, so that's a huge gap, really, in the pyramid. But they're flying, absolutely flying. I know Sam knows the gaffer, Wayne Brown, there. They've got a 100% record in the league this season. They've obviously won all of the FA Cup games as well. So they will be flying. They had a match called off this midweek, which, we've got a game called off. That's devastating. So then it'll be nice and fresh for the trip to Leighton Orient. And I just think Leighton Orient, they've got a record this season of it's patchy at home. They've conceded a lot of goals on home turf, and it's not been brilliant so far for Fletcher, has it? So if their minds aren't on it, Leighton Orient, if they're in any way casual or don't fancy it, Morden and Tiptree can go there and score goals, in my opinion. So, watch this space. They'll probably get spanked 7-0 now.
If they can get it to replay, I'd fancy them on a replay.
Yeah.
Fancy them on a replay. Sam, Chippenham, Northampton, you like the look of?
Yeah, well, Northampton, obviously, I played there for a year, and Chippenham is a near neighbour to Swindon Town. So there's a lot of links between Swindon and Chippenham, and keeping the pitch theme, there's an almighty slope on the Chippenham pitch at Hardenhuish Park. So that's the first thing that the Northampton players will have to navigate. They're on a brilliant unbeaten run as well, like Morden and Tiptree. Although 7 of the 15 games this season have been drawn. So they are the draw specialists with a fantastic defensive record as well. 14 goals conceded. The problem is they've only scored 15. So it's not going to be a glut of goals. But that said, Adrian, describe what it's like there. Sometimes if the league club can get that early goal, it can be really tricky. I was part of a Northampton team. Again, I think I played 8 minutes. On that occasion, that lost 1-0 at Canvey Island in the first round of the FA Cup. And I spoke to my mate yesterday of a Chippenham persuasion, and he said something similar will do just nicely.
Yeah, it's horrible. When you're the league team and you're going away, even at home, it can be awkward. But especially away to a place like Chippenham, you've really got to get the mind right and start.
I wanted those games away from home. It was going to a new ground, it was a new experience, and it was almost like you were back playing, with all respect, back playing at school or for the county or something like that. And you could really relax. The home games, you're on a hide into nothing, and it's very difficult to motivate yourself. And in all honesty, when you're playing for a league team, the last thing you want is a non-league team at home.
Yeah, I've been giant killed. When I was at Southend, we got giant killed by Doncaster, who were in the National League at the time. So a big club, Doncaster, but we were overwhelming favourites. Small crowd turned up, and we were just expected to roll them over. And I'll be honest, in the first half, we battered them. I was thinking, this is easy. We're going to walk this. We didn't score, and then they nicked one at the start of the second half, and all of a sudden panic can set in. The crowd are really on your back because they're thinking, what's going on here? And then it can quickly go pear-shaped. I remember I missed a great chance in the game as well. So, yeah, it's a match that haunted me. So, yeah, look, if Orient or Northampton get turned over, or any of these teams at home to non-league, it'd be something they have to live with. Yeah, not nice.
My team have got to go to Chelmsford. We've got to go and play Chippenham, I think around towards the end of December. We've already drawn 3-3 with them at home, and they were 2-1 up, I think, then 3-1 up. So, yeah, we scored in about the 90-something minute. So they love a good goal, but you're right, they love to concede one too. So that'll be a high scorer.
You want to be at least 2 goals up before you play up the slope in the second half. Yeah, it is one of them. It's unbelievable. Yeah. The way to pass has got to be spot on when you're going down the hill.
Love a slope. Bristol Rovers Bromley. So that is the
same thing.
The lower league team going to the
And it's
higher.
A team that's flying. Bromley, obviously top of the National League. They score a lot of goals. More at home, it has to be said. But they are full of such belief at the moment under Neil Smith. And we spoke to him on the radio not so long ago, Neil Smith, and it feels like a great spirit there, real family atmosphere. They'll go there and just have fun, Bromley. And Bristol Rovers are absolutely on a hide into nothing here. They're without their star striker, of course, at the moment, Johnson Clark-Harris. So again, if they fall behind, this might be the occasion for an upset. So, yeah, watch this space for that one.
My final FA Cup anecdote of the week was a first round tie at Stourbridge when I was playing for Walsall, and it was people like behind a rope.
Bit of a derby,
just down the M5, and there was no stand. It was like people just standing around the rope. It was brilliant. It was really good fun. And David Hay was fighting Valuev that night, and the fans started comparing me to the big Russian monster. And it was very good because it's a decent lookalike, and it stuck at Walsall for that season.
I'm trying to do a little.
I'm just looking at a picture of him. I think you're being a bit harsh on yourself.
Yeah, I'm being harsh, but when it was pinned up above my place, I enjoyed it. It's the brow.
It's bizarre because that was David versus Goliath.
Yeah.
And this, do you know what I'm missing today to talk to you? I'm not missing it because
I should have prepped you here, shouldn't I, Caroline? Sorry.
Midday today, yeah. David, because it's 10 years since David Hay Valuev. Midday today at the very posh hotel just down the road, David Hay is having a sit down with everyone talking about it. You should walk in.
He'll hit me.
You should totally walk in. Can we send him down there? Please. No, actually, please. Odds on that one, who would survive between David Hay and Sam Parkin?
Oh, David Hay's not that mobile anymore, is he?
He hasn't
got an ankle.
Well, he's a bit old jelly legs these days, isn't he?
Yeah.
My money's on Sam.
What about the rest of the FA Cup?
So the games that we've talked about there, Bristol Rovers odds on to beat Bromley, who are 9-2. Chippenham 4-1 to get the home win against Northampton, who are at 8-13. Leighton Orient massively odds on 1-6 to beat Maldon and Tiptree, who are 11-1. And if you'll indulge me, my potential upset Monday, the 11th of November, Harrogate 4-1 to beat Pompey at home.
Yeah, I think you're probably right on that one. I know you'll seek my approval, but I think Harrogate Town again, not a nice place. Lovely place to go, Harrogate, and I mean that about Dover. Lovely place to go, but when you're going there, tight pitches, trying to get a result, not easy.
Gateshead to beat Oldham. I'm going to chuck another one out there. I don't know why.
You might like this one, Sam. You might not. Hayes and Yedding up against Oxford United.
Well, I like it because they're all my mates. They're in the dugout. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think Handy will
and
do.
I'm going.
Are you
so
going?
Yeah, I'm going, yeah. So I'd be absolutely chuffed for the chaps if they were to cause an upset. Oxford don't need to get through. They're having a good enough season as it is. Hope they roll over.
Those are our picks. Thank you, Joe Crilly. Anything else you'd like to add?
Absolutely not, no. Thank you.
Anything else you want to say about the Moiety Bolton Wanderers? We started with the Wanderers. We can end with them if you like. No? Good. Adrian, Sam, anything?
No, I think I've spoken enough.
Any more FA Cup anecdotes?
that's me out. I've only ever scored one goal. I'll save that for the fourth round.
Fourth round is when it's going to happen. Fourth round is probably, I reckon, where you could hold David Hay to. So you've still got time if you want to go off for lunch. Thank you to everyone. We've been here. Thanks to Sam, to Joe, to Nick and producer Lucy for the fireworks and everything else in between. Remember to keep in touch with us via at The Totally Show. We're off to deal with maybe some severe wind, or at least David Hay.
You've been listening to The Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.